Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 12th of March. Healthcare, the first hour of our program today in two parts. We'll be talking about the state of Wisconsin and the federal government. Health exchanges are to be up and running next year, and we ask what are the plans for those exchanges, and of course for the state of Wisconsin, which has rejected a full Medicaid expansion. A little bit later in this hour, you may have seen this story. It's the longest story by an author in any issue of Time magazine. Stephen Brill will be with us, and he has written a cover story, Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. Both half hours, we welcome your phone calls, and I would imagine we'll have more than a few on healthcare topics. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, should you want to leave a message there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Kenneth Munson is our guest, the first half hour regional director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, who also served twice as deputy secretary at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. The area we'll be looking at, the first part of the program, is health exchanges and how Wisconsin is planning for this, how the federal government is planning for this, what happens to Badger Care. So it's a rather large topic. Kenneth Munson, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. Very happy to be with you this morning.
Can you, actually, some friends of mine and I were talking about all of this at a coffee meeting on Saturday, and the subject came up of health exchanges. Can you give us a broad overview, Kenneth, of how plans are underway for both the federal exchange and the state exchange? Are things moving along rapidly?
Yes, very much so, and have been underway for quite a while. And as you describe, there are a number of options. A state can operate its own exchange, or we call them marketplaces now, actually, places for people to shop for insurance. So the state can operate day-to-day operations of the marketplace, or if it does not, then the federal government or federal model will be in place in a state. And there's also a hybrid where the state can do some portions, the federal government can do other portions. That's called a partnership. So those are being launched and developed all across the country. So the work is going on at the federal government, and work is also going on, especially the states that have chosen to run their own marketplaces. That's been happening for quite some time and really at a fever pitch right now.
And in the state of Wisconsin, it's a little more confusing because the Medicaid proposal from the governor would move quite a few thousand state residents above the federal poverty level from state coverage, Badger Care, onto the federal insurance marketplace or exchange. Can you tell us, to the best of your knowledge, how that system will work, how it's going to affect people on Badger Care?
Well, I guess, one, I certainly obviously don't speak for state government and can't speak for what the Wisconsin state government intends to do, the governor, the legislature, but the way the exchanges work is a level of eligibility for someone to buy private insurance on the exchange and to receive a tax credit based on income levels. So the exchanges or marketplace is a structure that allows folks who don't have coverage now, who can't afford coverage, and who aren't eligible for Medicaid to be able to obtain health insurance coverage. People aren't automatically assigned to an exchange. So that's one of the things that becomes a little unclear for folks. It's something that you actually go and enroll and apply. So there's certain standards, income levels that make you eligible for a tax credit. If a person goes and applies and they're eligible, then they will be able to purchase insurance with a tax credit. Medicaid really is a connected but a separate issue. And the decision about whether or not a state is going to expand its Medicaid program is really a separate issue from whether or not it sets up an exchange. So as I understand and can best explain what we know of the state of Wisconsin's, or at least the governor's statement, he does not intend or does not want the state to expand its Medicaid program. And some of those folks who might be eligible for Medicaid under an expanded program could possibly get insurance through the exchange. There's nothing automatic about that. So I want to make sure that people understand there isn't a if you don't expand Medicaid, then people automatically then go to the exchange or marketplace. That's not how it actually works.
Mm-hmm. If you don't expand Medicaid, you don't receive quite a bit of money, correct?
Yes, that's right. In the Affordable Care Act, it expands or allows for the expansion of Medicaid in every state. And if the state expands its Medicaid eligibility, then it can receive 100% of the cost of that expansion are borne by the federal government or the federal taxpayer rather than the state. It really is a way of trying to make it possible and make it make sense financially for the state to expand its Medicaid program to get a lot of folks who are uninsured into the system, get them care early, get them care when it's least expensive, so that in the longer term, even though you're spending money, federal dollars, to bring more people into the Medicaid program, over the longer term, you're saving those dollars. First and most importantly, you're saving lives and saving human suffering, but you're saving those dollars that are being spent when those folks end up in emergency rooms or other places because they have very serious conditions. So for the states, many states that were in opposition to the Affordable Care Act or in opposition to Medicaid expansion have, after looking at all the evidence, have changed their minds. Florida, for example, mm-hmm. recently, and Arizona and Michigan, governors in those states have said, we actually think this makes sense, so we are going to expand our Medicaid program, even though we were in opposition to the law previously.
And my understanding is that any governor who remains opposed to those funds could change his or her mind and accept the full federal funding.
Yes, it's a state decision that could be made really at any time. The state could decide, state elected officials could decide at any time to expand its Medicaid program, and could also decide at any time, once it expanded, to say, no, this is not what we want to do, and we're going to go back to our prior enrollment standards and take away that expansion. So the states have that option to do it at any point, but for the next three calendar years, 2014, 2015, and 2016 is when the full 100% federal funding for that expansion occurs, and then it eventually drops to 90% where it stays.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that we have moved away a little bit, at least some of the states have, away from ideology concerning this because it's been kind of a political battle?
Well, I mean, certainly there's ideology, there's partisanship around all of these big decisions.
Yes.
That's not surprising. That's where we are in our country. I guess I'd only say that there have been states where there was very strong opposition to expanding Medicaid and to establishing marketplaces or exchanges. And as elected officials in states have looked at it, some of those folks have moved away from the positions that were taken earlier simply because they saw it made sense for their states to, for example, in Florida and Arizona and Michigan, to expand Medicaid, even though the governors in those states had expressed strong opposition previously.
Kenneth, why are we not, this is less than a year away now, why are we not hearing a lot more about these exchanges, how they're going to work, how you sign up for them, how you choose an exchange?
You know, it's an interesting question of at what time you have your kind of big discussion, mass market, get out to as many people as possible, because you really have to calibrate it and try to make sure that you do it close enough to the time when people can sign up so you don't lose them. So, you know, when Part D Medicare expansion took place in 2003, 2004, and when the Children's Health Program expansion took place, we've learned a lot about not going out there too early with messages that don't connect to when people are making their decisions. So the work that's been done the last year and beyond has been around setting up the infrastructure, making sure the IT systems work, and right now a lot of work with the insurance companies so that they can build the insurance policies that will be offered through the exchange at the marketplaces. But then when you get to the specific messaging that says to a person who's uninsured, okay, here's an option for you. You have to really think about having that conversation kind of closer to a time when it means something.
Mm-hmm.
So that is going to be taking place this spring, more into the summer and fall. And we will be having what are called navigators, the local community organizations that are have experience in local communities, in states, connecting with people around the eligibility issues. That'll be happening, not now, but a few months from now. And certainly as we get close to the October day when people can begin signing up, that's when, you know, you really start to see activity and a lot of outreach on a more of a fevered pitch. But we need to really calibrate and make sure that it's something that you engage somebody and it's a specific purpose and endpoint for the message that you're delivering.
You must be operating at a fevered pitch to get this up and running, huh?
Well, there certainly is a great deal of work going on.
I imagine.
States across the country and D.C.
Right, a lot. The second half hour of the show, we're going to be speaking, and I'm sure you've seen this article, with the author of Bitter Pill, this very lengthy article in Time magazine. He begins this article by talking about a 42-year-old guy from Lancaster, Ohio, who was told last March that he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. His wife had to get him to she went to a cancer center in Houston. They had started their own business, a small technology business, and they couldn't buy comprehensive health insurance, so they were paying $469 a month and wound up with these huge medical bills that they had to pay in advance in order for him to get diagnosed and then to get treated. They had to borrow like $86,000 or something like that just for the initial diagnosis and treatment. I was wondering, as I was reading this article and thinking about the health exchanges and talking to people, will we be able to get some kind of insurance that will be reasonable for us, that will cover those kinds of catastrophic expenses that people encounter in life?
Well, certainly one of the central focuses of the Affordable Care Act and especially the establishment of the exchanges is to first off, make sure that people can get coverage, insurance coverage, without having to be concerned that a prior medical history will keep them out of the market altogether, so they can't even obtain that coverage. But secondly, to ensure that they do have coverage in place so that when they do have a catastrophic situation, that they're not bankrupted by it. It's not a case where you end up looking into bill for $100,000 for a life-saving surgery. Really, by spreading coverage to more of the population and by making sure that getting coverage is not so expensive or so tied to prior health history that it just can't be bought, that's the way you eliminate those kinds of things from happening.
Kenneth Munson is our guest, first half hour regional director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. He twice was deputy secretary at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services in Madison. We're talking about those health exchanges, how Wisconsin, which by all indications will have a different system, will fit in, where you get information about all of this, because it's coming up pretty soon. We have lots of phone calls. One line, though, is open. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Jim from Fond du Lac is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Kathleen and Kenneth. Thank you for this show, and keep it coming about healthcare, please. My question is, I've been on the internet looking for specific information about the tax credits that I believe are tied to your income. Is there a website or websites you can recommend where I can get this specific information?
I'm very happy you asked, because healthcare.gov is the website that has that information and a lot more. And as you suggest, the tax credits are on a sliding scale based on income, but it will give you that basic information. And I'm assuming he's talking about the tax credits that will be applied to reduce the premium amounts for persons buying insurance through the exchanges. So healthcare.gov is the starting point and a place for a lot of other great information as well.
Are we going to be able to figure all of this out, or is it going to be complicated?
Well, I think compared to the system that we have now, I was at a job a couple of jobs ago where there were 10 of us around the table trying to figure out our healthcare options, and I think there were probably 20 advanced degrees, and I think a week later we still hadn't figured it out. One of the things about the Affordable Care Act, and certainly about getting insurance for the exchanges, is it really does make it a much more a simplified way to shop for health insurance. So, for example, the insurance policies offered through the exchanges, through the marketplaces, all have a common set of benefits, a floor of benefits called essential health benefits. So it's a starting point right there where you know what's covered and what's not. And then companies can offer more in addition to that, but they're a common set of required benefits. And in addition, the policies are all in four categories, platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. And that simply describes in each category how much a percent the consumer pays, how much percent the policy pays. So in platinum, it's 90%. The policy pays 10% cost to the consumer, and then it changes for those four. So really, four categories of policies, all with a certain set of minimum benefits. It's a place to find a much more simplified, apples-to-apples a way to compare policies than we have now.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Greg is next in Glidden. Hi, Greg.
Good morning, Kathleen and Kath. How are you this morning?
All right. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. I strongly disagree with Governor Walker's decision on repealing for refusing to take the money from. And then another thing I disagree with the Republicans on is they're trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Those are two things I strongly disagree with. They need to stop acting like a bunch of idiots and work with the Democrats.
Thanks, Greg, for your call. There have been calls for a repeal of Obamacare to balance the budget. I can't imagine that's going anywhere. Do you think it will, Kenneth?
I really can't speak to that other than we have president in office. We have a Congress and a House of Representatives, and it would take veto-proof majorities in both houses or agreement by the president and Congress to make that happen, so people can draw their own conclusions as to whether that's likely or not.
Dave in Appleton. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I'm an independent business person. The Affordable Care Act and the exchanges, I consider October 1st and then January to be my liberation day, my ability to have a fair treatment compared to larger employers who have a lot of negotiating power puts me in a better position. It has so many good things, and I would say that for the Americans to really change our health care system, one thing has to happen, and that is that all employers simply shed their responsibility, which I admire them for paying for employees' health care. Only when the individuals see what I have seen, see how messed up it is and how expensive it is and how you worry more not about the fact that you're sick, but that your insurance company might find out that you're sick and then charge you more. And all this pain, most people don't see it because they have employers fronting for them. They have HR departments fronting for them. Or if you're on Medicare, they have a very well-run program that is very rational and et cetera. And only when people don't have their employer fronting for them will they see what I consider to be some evil of our system and really get behind fundamental reform that starts to get at cost and everything else. I mean, this is just the beginning of people starting to see what our system is like and being able to negotiate, being able to have clarity in pricing. Just the beginning. The end is that everyone sees all the other problems and deals with the fundamental problems such as cost.
Kenneth.
I'd only say I think one of the things the gentleman points out is the system we have now, it's very, very hard to discern what the cost of health care is for an individual, you know, for a company. You have a situation where if a person is paying in cash, they may have one charge. If Medicare or Medicaid is paying, there's another charge. If a private insurance insurer is paying, there's a different amount of charge. So one of his points, the idea of there being a sense of what the cost of something is, that's been a complicating factor. I think the article that you referenced in Time Magazine really, really points out how difficult it is for people to understand how much money we spend in our system, where we spend it, whether it's spent well or not spent well. And I do think that more transparency around that issue is a really a positive thing.
Thank you, Dave, so much for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. Don in Portage is next. Hi, Don.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say the gentleman ahead of me had it exactly right. But my question is that for those folks that are on Medicare and are just hanging on the edge of being into Medicaid, apparently with Walker's new plan, they're not going to make it into Medicaid. Will they be able to go to these exchanges and purchase supplemental insurance?
I didn't quite understand the question, except the last part, the question about buying supplemental insurance in the marketplaces. The marketplaces really are for a more full policy with a whole set of essential health benefits. So it's not really a replacement for buying, you know, an add-on policy for a person in Medicare. And I didn't quite get the part where the person, the caller, was seemed to be saying that. A person is on Medicare, but may, I think he said something like fall off Medicare. I don't quite understand that.
Maybe such a lower income that he or she would qualify for Medicaid.
Yes, separately or in addition to.
Right.
But I, you know, the core question, I guess, is the exchanges really aren't, or the marketplaces really aren't meant to be a place to buy supplemental insurance.
Do you think that will happen eventually? Should it?
That's just a question I can't answer about happening eventually. But at this point, the policies through the exchanges are really the full policies with a set of essential health benefits. Certainly, they could be in place of. So, for example, let's say a person, if a person is not eligible for Medicaid, not eligible for Medicare for whatever reason. Again, I'm having a little trouble with that part of the question. They certainly could purchase a policy on the exchange. I don't know if that would make more sense than being Medicare eligible. So I'm sorry I'm not answering clearly because I don't quite understand the question. But at this point, it wouldn't be a place to buy a supplemental insurance policy.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Don?
Well, really not, but I guess that's probably the best we're going to get. We're just going to have to wait and see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Janine in Antioch, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. I am paying $1,400 a month for Blue Cross Blue Shield for myself and my daughter. I am retired but not eligible for Medicare yet. So can I purchase insurance at a cheaper rate from that pool?
I can't speak to each individual person's situation, and certainly the policies haven't been developed yet, but that certainly is the idea, is that you will be able to purchase insurance from the marketplace with that tax credit, and the tax credit that folks will get will bring down the cost of the premium substantially. So I can't, predict for you, especially not knowing you or not knowing income, all those things, but the idea is that people who are right now purchasing insurance on the individual market are paying extremely high premiums and for generally very limited policies. What we're talking about is then you being able to purchase policies on the marketplace, and instead of being on your own, essentially, without the bargaining power of a big pool like a big employer would have, you're now part of a big pool of others who have more leverage and therefore get a better premium. So it certainly should be the case, and I can't speak for you specifically, that you would then go and seek a policy through the marketplace and pay substantially less than you are paying now as an individual in the market. That is what should happen and will happen for the vast majority of people.
That seems like a whole lot of money, $1,400 a month, but I would imagine, and you would know this, Kenneth, that it's not uncommon right now to pay that much.
It's not uncommon, depending on, again, someone's personal health history or the family health history is one of the biggest issues in the insurance market. And as people know, if you have a condition, a chronic condition or otherwise, if your child does, first off, you may not even be able to get insurance. But secondly, if you get it, it's extremely expensive. So buying on the individual market right now is very, very difficult and very expensive. And the marketplaces put you into a pool of more people and don't allow companies to charge you a different rate based on your personal health history. That, for the vast majority of people, drops down the premium that they're paying now compared to what they would pay on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. You need to return at some point. We're just flooded with phone calls. People have so many questions, Kenneth. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, happy to be with you.
Well, we'll ask you again. You can be sure of that. Kenneth Munson, Regional Director of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. He gave that website, which is a good one if you're trying to figure out how to proceed from here and how we will, as a country, proceed when the Affordable Care Act goes into full effect next year. It is. Go to healthcare.gov, but we will schedule other programs on this issue as the months go by. We're going to continue talking about health care, and as our guests will answer the question, why medical bills are killing us. Bitter Pill is the title of the cover story on Time Magazine, and it is a very, very lengthy and comprehensive story about why things cost the way they do. And Stephen will be with us in just one moment. So phone calls applicable for that. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, leave your messages there, too, if you want us to go a certain direction as we line up guests down the road on healthcare exchanges. Please let us know what you want to hear. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.